It's time for Chris Chapman's, a.k.a. Magnum's, closing number here in Las Vegas. So before he leaves, let's enjoy his magnum opus.
All righty, welcome in, everybody. It is Monday, July the 8th, for those of you who keep track of such trivial matters. But it is one of my final shows here in Las Vegas before I set off for the land of the rising sun, where the sun actually just came up a few hours ago. My wife, my beautiful wife, is on her way to work. She likes to text me before she goes to work and distract me from what I have going on here, focused on some stuff. But obviously, we have some matters that we need to attend to before I get on the plane and travel over there myself. So some pretty important stuff she's texting me before I go on the air and before she goes to work. But here today on Monday, following a nice long weekend with my buddy, Doug.
Hey!
I don't know what you go by. Do you go by Doug Douglas?
I do. Yes. Yeah. Don't say anything else.
Doug Douglas. No. Yes. Doug Douglas, yes. Right. He is the...
I've gone by many things.
One of the bosses. One of my favorite personas, however, is the Raging Cajun, who I haven't heard for a very, very long time.
I do declare! Woo, doggy!
One of the highlights was, and me and Doug have worked together for 15
decades.
Years. Yeah. And Doug would go to the Super Bowl every year with Mitch Moss, who is now over at VSiN.
Yep.
You can catch him on multiple sister stations. And with John Hansen, who was the old program director here. I think John is in Kansas City.
Yep.
Yeah. Doing television, I believe.
I'm not sure he's doing television anymore, but he was for a while, yes.
Yep. And the Raging Cajun would make an appearance interviewing some pretty well-known.
Which was not my, in fact, that'd be interesting. I wonder if there's any left in there. That was not my idea. That was John Hansen's idea.
That was good.
Yeah, I think my favorite one that I did of all time was Deuce McAllister.
Who's from
right.
the Bayou.
Right. Michael Irvin was another good one. Because Michael Irvin was listening off at the Super Bowl that was at Dallas, when it was in Dallas at Jerry's place. And or not in Dallas, because Jerry's place is not in Dallas, but halfway in between. But he was talking about the great receivers, and I go, and don't forget about Juju. And he looks at me and goes, yeah, right, okay. But Deuce McAllister, I got to do a whole interview with him. And now Jessica's probably wondering, what on earth is this? But they did not know that I would just normally talk like this. So John Hansen, the program director, to bring him over, and I Deuce McAllister, I go, ooh, doggy, I do declare it's Deuce McAllister here in the flesh, and I'm the Raging Cajun ready to talk to you. Deuce, let me ask you a very important question. Do you like mud bugs? Which are crawfish. Nola, and I'd always go, Nola. And I would only know Mitch Moss. Anybody else who was on the radio, I would not know. So if it was John Hansen or you, I go, who that? Where's Mitchie? I only know Mitchie. Where's Mitchie? Then the problem is they'd never have me on. Like, it was not known that it was me for years.
Yeah.
And I still remember a couple PR people one time. After John left, because Mitch did not. I don't think Mitch was a huge fan of the
Raging
Cajun.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Because then he became program director, and let's just say the Raging Cajun soon disappeared.
He was retired.
And one of the PR people was listening one time, because I would co-host often with Mitch, and we just let it out, and he go, well, you know, when you played the Raging Cajun, and I go, and Mitch and I both got a text, and it's like, if you got young kids listening, it's like, I'll go with the Easter Bunny. It's like finding out the Easter Bunny's not real. That was not a real person.
We got to get the Raging Cajun to come visit Japan, I think.
There we go.
Interviewing people in the streets of Tokyo.
Now, you have to remember that when I would interview a lady, then I would...
All the Southern gentlemen, yes.
I would turn out to be... Well, now, I'd like to just say, if you come over here, Lily. Now, do you want some sweet tea while we do this interview?
It was like Cornelius Vanderbilt.
I would go, and then if like Mitch or John would interrupt me, I go, don't interrupt me while I'm talking to Holly Madison.
Anyway.
Maybe we should, I know we've got
move
Willie
on,
coming
move on.
On.
So,
Willie coming out at 4:30.
Yeah. Did you enjoy the 4th? Did you have a good weekend?
Quiet. I'm one of those people, I'm older than
Both of us. Yeah. Jess on the other side. Yeah.
Right. I'm one of those people, unless it's really good, like New Year's and July 4th, I just hide at home.
Yeah.
I figure that's amateur hour. So it's fine. I just hit it home. You know, I'll go out other weekends, but on the big holidays, let the tourists have it. Let the young. Now you can tell I'm really old. I'll say, let the young kids have it.
Yeah.
You know, that's their holidays. I'm staying at home.
My fourth was actually the third. I went out to the Aviators game. They played OKC. They unfortunately lost multiple times. That's like the only
doesn't matter now.
That's the only team that gives them a hard time, though. I think OKC's beaten the Aviators 8 of 12 times this year, including yesterday. But I was out there, and they have a great fireworks show out at Las Vegas Ballpark, and they do it right behind the right field berm, and it's a great display. I mean, it went on for probably 15, 20 minutes, and I got in the car, and I was home in 10 minutes, and I was home. I went out, got lunch on the 4th. I don't even remember what I ate, and that was it. I was in all night, walked the dogs.
Well, especially if you have pets.
Yeah, and fortunately, my dogs are not, they don't fit the norm where they don't seem to be bothered.
Well, that's good.
Which is definitely a good thing, because I know there's a lot of people who, and I always see the posts on social media, think of our pets and also think of our veterans who may have PTSD. So for me, the 4th is not quite what it was when I was growing up, because I grew up right on the Jersey Shore. And for us, 4th of July was the big, especially for me working on the boardwalk as a teenager, that was big money weekend. And we would always eat well, eat lots of crabs, lots of barbecues. I'd always have to make my round stop at 4 or 5 different places. But now I'm like you. I'm home. I don't really do much, but I do enjoy the Nathan's hot dog eating contest.
Well, you and I are on different sides.
Yeah,
there.
I
see it as gluttony, and gluttony is one of the 7 deadly sins. I find it disgusting.
I you know, Ryan Wallace, who of course is the co-host of the VGK Insider Show, me and him are big on Joey Chestnut and Darren Millard. The other
he's not aging well. No, Joey Chestnut.
No, and yeah, he looks like he needed a year off and. But Darren, not such a fan. He doesn't, but me and Ryan love to go to him, give him a hard time. Like, hey, Joey Chestnut's this great athlete, blah, blah, blah. I was in here with Danny on Wednesday, day before the 4th.
I was listening to the show.
Yeah, and Danny told our listeners that the total hot dogs for Joey Chestnut was 71.5. He ate 70.5.
That's pretty good.
And Danny said, he said, listen, he may get to a point where he's so comfortably ahead that he might just put it in cruise control. Joey said he started a little slow, and then he got his rhythm, and he started going, and I guess, you know, eventually. But he won, I think, by 15 hot dogs. So
did you sit there and watch it?
I do, yeah. I like the introductions, because the guy, I think his name is George Shea, and he's the owner, and he wears the little styrofoam hat that, like, you see from like the 1920s or whatever, when you see old pictures of Coney Island. And the intros are always what he ate 75 pierogies in one sitting. He ate 122 chicken wings. That's a highlight for me, because generally the competition is a blowout.
That would be the highlight.
And Chestnut wins his 17th Nathan's hot dog eating.
Isn't it called the mustard belt?
The mustard belt. It's like Hulk Hogan, except he's got mustard instead of gold. Or Ric Flair, or whatever WWF wrestler you want to throw out there. But I know that you're not a fan now, so it kind of makes the topic a little more different than where I was expecting it to go.
No,
so,
no, it's okay.
Where do you rank this? Because now I know you're not a fan.
Right.
But compared to like other, I'll just call them niche sports. Stuff that's generally not in the mainstream, with the exception of a few times, maybe a year, or in the case of like figure skating, once every 4 years. Because I'll be honest, I enjoy watching figure skating in the Olympics. I couldn't tell you a damn thing about it the 4 years in between.
That's like me with soccer. I will watch World Cup, you know, Gold Cup even. I don't.
Yeah,
US, you know, I mean, not I know so they good. Lost 2-1. But I mean, when it's the World Cup and the energy and everything, I'm in it. So there are certain sports. I know you had down here like bowling.
Yeah.
That's a tough watch. And I like bowling.
Yeah, yeah. I like to bowl.
But I always consider any sport that most people are playing with the beer in your hand, or, you know, you're eating nachos in between your turn. I don't know. And they're talented and everything. I know they oil up the lanes.
I know one bowler, and that's the, you know, the, what's his name? Pete Weber.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only guy. Who do you think I am? That's the only reason I know who he is.
But the best bowler of all time is a fictional bowler, in my opinion, played by Bill Murray.
Yes, yes, in Kingpin.
Right, Kingpin.
Great movie. Great movie.
Great movie.
My favorite is when he's doing the scene where he's doing the charity with the moms.
Right. Well, just when his hair flips back and everything. I mean, that made me like Woody Harrelson more.
Yes, yes. But when you watch this, and I'm assuming that you don't, but where do you rate it? Like, is it?
I have watched it before.
Is it a little higher up on I'll use the pun food chain than some of these other niche sports, or is it something that? Because honestly, I don't know what goes on between July 4th and July 4th. But I know they have like this whole circuit where Steve Cofield is a big fan of the competitive eating.
Oh, he's huge, yeah. And it's not just hot dogs. I mean, they do all different kinds of, you know, like, hard-boiled eggs, chicken wings, like you said.
Didn't I see lemonade?
Yes.
They do gallons of lemonade.
Yes. Yeah, because there's that one guy who chugs the big barrels of lemonade. And I'm like, I enjoy like lemonade once a summer. Like, I'm not a big lemonade guy.
Make sure you don't have canker sores.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But I watch them, and now Kool-Aid, I could do Kool-Aid. I mean, I go to this barbecue place up the street, and they have like two Kool-Aid.
Oh, I go to this guy, Jim Jones, and he wants me to do Kool-Aid.
hopefully not too much.
There'll be very few people that might understand that.
Yeah, I got it. But I could sit there, and I drink the Kool-Aid, but...
There you go.
not Jim Jones's Kool-Aid, the Kool-Aid at the barbecue joint up the street. But we recently had breakdancing.
I'll tell you what, I'll take competitive eating over breakdancing.
That the only thing that breakdancing got us was the Australian girl who became an internet sensation. But it got me thinking. The Olympics is always putting these kind of goofy, silly sports. Like, they've had ballroom dancing. I know equestrian has been in forever. To me, the horse is doing most of the work.
Dressage.
Yeah. And I'm sure the, I don't know if they call it a jockey. Whoever the person who rides the horse.
I don't think it's a jockey.
Yeah. In equestrian, they're probably directing the horse where to go. But at the end of the day, the horse is the one jumping over the hurdles and the water hazards and all that. So if they put it in 2028, they're not going to. But they could, in theory, have gone and retroactively or added it. Should they consider maybe adding it to the Olympic menu at some point? Because it's
another pun intended.
Yes, absolutely intended. It's a big thing. Like, there's a lot of people who tune in for this.
Where is that Olympics?
Well, the 2028 is in Los Angeles.
Oh, that's right. I thought it was the next one. That is the next one.
Yeah,
right?
It's okay. 2 years, well, 3 years away.
No, because they're doing flag football, so that's the weird one coming up. But having said that, if you're going to do a niche sport that I can't believe cornhole is all over ESPN TV, and I can't believe that. To me, that's boring. They're doing it. But what I like is, have you seen the full field frisbee?
Yes, yes.
That to me is amazing.
Yeah, like ultimate frisbee is fun. Like,
it's not frisbee golf.
Yeah, it's like frisbee football. Yes,
or
yeah,
yeah.
But
count me in on that.
I think there's a couple different things that they could add. Like, they added rugby a couple years ago. And I used to go to
rugby's fun.
I used to go watch it when it was at Sam Boyce Stadium, Sevens. The Rugby Sevens.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it went.
Well, the Sevens isn't here, but they have a big rugby thing every year. I've gone the last
T-Mobile.
2 years. Yeah.
Or not T-Mobile. Allegiant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they bring
New
in
Zealand,
like teams from England.
Australia.
And,
yeah. And that is fun. And you know what? Once you get used to it, I could see if I lived in a place, if I moved to Australia, I could see becoming a rugby fan or New Zealand.
Well, it's funny you say that, because obviously, you know, it's no secret I'm moving to Japan, but I have become a big fan of sumo wrestling.
I've never gotten into that. No.
What I find to be the most intriguing aspect of sumo is there's no weight class.
Oh,
so
I did not know
there
that.
There are matches. Now, there's 8 divisions, and basically you work your way up to the highest level, and the top division. Well, all divisions, there's no weight class. So you can have guys who, and it happens, guys who weigh like 230, 240 pounds, going up against guys who are like 420 pounds. And don't be so surprised when that small guy beats the big guy, because there's so many technical aspects. And a lot of times it's about your technique. And some guys like to grab they call it the mawashi. That's like the big, you know, the belt that they wear. Some guys like to grab that and force guy out. Some guys like to slap. Some guys like to push. But there's one guy, a really small guy, and he's one of the fan favorites because he takes down the big guys all the time. And when I say takes down, he's not pushing them out of the ring. He does like a hip toss and gets them over and gets them down on the ground. And these are guys who outweigh him by 120, 130 pounds a lot of times. So you talked about if you live there, you know, you get into it. I actually started watching it when I met my wife. We were actually in a hotel and it was on television. I said, I got to watch this. This is cool. And like 20 years ago, they had one here at Mandalay Bay. And coincidentally, John Hansen speaks Japanese and he did all of the reads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Cause I heard it and this was the days before text messaging. That's how long ago it was. And I came into work on Monday. I said, was that you doing all the voiceover stuff? He's like, yeah. They had me do. And he told me the story. He learned Japanese because when he was a teenager, Hideo Nomo came over and he wanted to learn Japanese because he wanted to do translation at a Major League Baseball team. So, anyway, getting back to the Olympic thing, L.A., I don't think hot dogs are – I mean,
right.
I guess you could do Dodger dogs, but what is an L.A. food? Like, what would they eat?
Well, I mean, street tacos.
Yeah. Oh.
That would be – having grown up in Southern California, I would say street tacos would be
I like
number
that.
One.
I
could see – yeah, I mean, if you were going to go Dodger dogs, which I think are overrated.
They're not – for $16, you could keep your Dodger dog.
You know, I mean, you could do – I mean, I'm more of a burrito guy, so
that
would be. But I think tacos would be
Street
would be
tacos is good.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jess? Street tacos?
Well, I was thinking more of like those cheese tacos – not tacos, cheese hot dogs. Have you – like the Korean – you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, yeah. So they're just like a hot dog, but corn dog style – but just cheese.
Oh, it's wrapped in. Oh, my son's told me about
those.
I'm not
so sure we should be talking about this so close to dinner time.
Yeah, I think there's a place in Chinatown that has the cheesy hot dogs, and my son says they're really, really good. So he goes there with his buddy. But street tacos, I think that's good. Now,
or do we go the other way? The preconceived notions of some people in Southern California do like tofu.
No, tofu is. I'm a hard pass on the tofu.
I'm just saying, we don't have to eat it. We just have to watch it.
Well, back to the hot dog eating contest. I saw that PETA was coming out with vegan dogs to the contest. Did that get any coverage? That's why Joey Chestnut missed last year.
Because he endorsed a non-meat hot dog, and it made the people at Nathan's quite upset. And there was this he said, you know what, fine, I'm not going to compete. And glad he's back.
And
now,
then ratings went.
Yeah, nobody watched last year because he wasn't in it. So, and listeners, you could text in. Don't be shy, right? Throw out like what you think they should eat.
Empanadas.
Empanadas are good. But you and I know who Joey Chestnut is because you just saw him on television. But if you hypothetically you're at a Golden Knights game in middle of December, early January, you're standing in line at, I don't know, Barbecue Mexicana, which is one of my favorite places to eat at T-Mobile Arena, by the way. But if Joey Chestnut's in line ahead of you, do you recognize him?
No, I would not.
I am ashamed to admit that I probably would.
I was about to say ashamed to me. You probably wouldn't. Yes. Yeah. I think you should be more ashamed that you probably would.
Yes. But
is he on your Mount Rushmore of all-time athletes? Of goats?
I mean,
in a way, you could say of, if you consider that a
17
sport,
titles.
Who else? I mean, could be on the Mount Rushmore of all-time
goats. Does Bill Russell have 11? Joey Chestnut's got him beat by 6.
There you go. Harper has 7 rings or something. Ron Harper.
Yeah. Robert Ory, I think, has 7, but that's funny.
On the Mount Rushmore, Joey Chestnut, everybody be pointing up. Who's that?
Who's that guy? Who's that guy with the
bloated face?
Yeah. Right. Too much Kool-Aid and lemonade for Joey Chestnut. Changing the gears a little bit here. I don't know how much you watch the Pittsburgh Pirates, because I'll be honest, I never watched the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Well, I'm a Cubs fan, so I watch them a little bit more because they are in the Cubs division, even though that's one team the Cubs probably don't have to worry about this year.
Yeah, well, the way the Cubs are playing, there's not a lot of teams they have to worry about right now.
Everybody says don't worry about St. Louis. I know they're back, but St. Louis always scares me because they'll get a second half run.
Yeah, they always do.
They always do.
And the funny thing is, Cub fan, Met fan, we mutually hate the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
I never knew. So in 2000, 8, UNLV made the Sweet 16 in basketball. I went to Chicago, and then the next weekend they were in St. Louis. I was out drinking at one of the bars down on the landing in St. Louis, and I was wearing my Mets hat. I was called pond scum by so many Cardinal fans. I still don't know what that means, why they've associated the Mets with pond scum.
Yeah, you're too close to New Jersey, maybe.
Well, I'm from New Jersey.
No, I know. That's what I'm just saying. Maybe that's the reason
why. But Paul Skeens is having an unbelievable season.
Well,
like,
not if you count wins.
Yeah, well, wins, right? Right. So he's sixth in the eighth in the National League in strikeouts, second in ERA, and sixth in WHIP, which is walks, hits per innings pitched. However, he's 4-7 on the year. Four wins are tied for 96th in the National League. However, when you look at his numbers, he's got to be a legitimate contender for the Cy Young. Is there an issue if he goes, like, say, 9-16 and continues to pitch the way he is with the numbers, and he's in the top three or four in strikeouts, and he's in the top, you know, five or so in earned run average? Do you have an issue if he only has like 9 wins?
And if he wins the Cy Young? Not if the other numbers, because that's something he can't control.
Right.
He lost, what, 1-0 against the Mariners?
Yeah, 1-0.
Now, against the Mariners, their offense, maybe that's not the best one to pull. But what more basically could he do?
Yeah. Like, it's the crazy thing is, and I looked into it, he's had 19 starts this year. In 16 of those 19 starts, he's given up 2 or fewer runs. I've never seen a pitcher have a run like that and get so little support. I mean, as a Met fan, it kind of reminds me of Johan Santana, because he had a season where he had numbers like that, but not 16 of 19, maybe like 20 of 27, 20 of 28. He was giving up numbers like that. But for Paul Skeens,
right, I was just trying to think of Kerry Wood when he first came in.
What do you have, 20 strikeouts in a game, Kerry Wood?
Yeah, I was there when he pitched against Roger Clemens.
Oh, wow.
Andy Kay and I went to that game.
Andy Kay, good old morning show on Cop.
That's right.
Yes. Former Aviators PA guy.
That's right.
Yeah, on-field host. But Kerry Wood, yeah, that I'm trying to think. Yeah, he was, and the Cubs were not very good when they had one good year.
They had
good
year. But off the top of my head, I don't know his numbers. But to answer that, I think if you're a pitcher, now I think what would go against him if somebody was comparable.
Yeah.
And they had more wins, people would say, oh, there's more pressure on them because they're pitching in
important games.
Like
Zach Wheeler, in theory.
Exactly, yeah. Which then I could understand. But if his numbers outshine, except for wins and losses, everybody else, you know, if you're playing, if you're whoever filling the pitcher at the end of the year and they're getting run support, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I vote for Paul Skeens.
It's pretty wild. Now, Pittsburgh, notorious for being basically a place where no good players want to be. Should the Pirates just do everybody a favor and trade him now, like trade him today? Because you know they're never going to put anything around him that's substantial, and the guy's just going to continue to pitch like this.
But then why trade him? Because what are you going to get back? Because what I'm saying is, if they're never going to do anything, you might as well have something for the fans to come out for. Because all of a sudden you trade them, and then you get somebody back. And then if they become any good, what, you keep trading them just because you're trying to make money rather than be competitive? So,
yeah.
You know, that's tough.
And I'm the idiot. I would spend money to go see him play.
We'll talk about it at the start of the 5 o'clock hour.
Yeah.
But I would pay money to go see him play at that baseball facility, because that is a superb baseball facility.
Yeah, I have never been. I've been to Pittsburgh. I have never been to the PNC Park. But when I see it on television, I still think it's unbelievable. Now, I am ashamed to admit this. I would not know Paul Skeens if he was in line in front of me at Barbecue Mexicana at T-Mobile Arena.
There was a couple years I was a huge Tampa Bay Rays fan because I bet on them. They won the American League, blah, 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 blah. I watched them all the time. Mitch and I went to a Super Bowl, and I was wearing a Tampa Bay Ray jersey. And Mitch goes, "That's pretty amazing, isn't it?" And I go, "What?" And he goes, "Oh, you're standing right next to Evan Longoria."
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I go, "What? You got to be kidding me." So yeah. I'm not good at recognizing. I'm not sure if you two were out in the wild, I'd recognize either one of you two.
Baseball, and I think football have maybe the most unrecognizable, because football, they're covering their face with a helmet.
So unless you're a quarterback and you're on TV all the time, that's tough.
Like, I know Pat Mahomes. You know, and
I would hope so. Yeah,
I knew Troy Aikman, you know, because he had a very distinguished smile.
I'm not sure if Justin Herbert walked in here, I'd know what he looked like.
Or Joe Burrow,
maybe him.
If he had the bleach blonde Eminem look, I would probably know. But yeah, I mean, listen, I'm a Jets fan. I don't even know who our quarterback is, and he could walk in here, sit down, and do the show with me, and I'd have no idea unless he said hi. I'm Justin Fields. I'm the quarterback of the New York Jets.
Yeah, what do you do for a living?
Anyway, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk about the Las Vegas Aces with Willie G. Ramirez. He is, I would say, one of the most well-known writers who covers the WNBA. And we're going to pick his brain a little bit because the Aces, they get demolished by the Indiana Fever on Wednesday. They bounce back. They crush the Connecticut Sun, who are not very, very good.
But before that, they beat the Phoenix Mercury.
Yeah.
So they're kind of just an up-and-down team,
yeah.
Which makes sense because they're at 500.
That's the thing. I want to ask Willie, like, why are they Jekyll and Hyde? We'll talk to Willie G. Ramirez on the other side here on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
MVP has it. Surveying with 5 on the shot clock. Asia, shot fake, spin move, turnaround jumper. You know it's true. It's like butter. 64-47 Aces. The Asia Wilson Show. It's playing in all 13 WNBA cities.
Back to Chris Chapman's Magnum Opus on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
All right, welcome back to Magnum Opus. This is Chris Chapman sitting in with Doug Douglas. And that was T.C. Martin. The voice of the Las Vegas Aces on the call coming back as the Aces defeated Connecticut Sun yesterday. And TC, a big fan of the competitive eating. I saw his pictures on his social media that he was actually at.
But it's true, he's back
east. The Nathan's hot dog contest because the Aces play. I don't know how he ended up in New York. Well, I guess when they travel to Connecticut, they probably stay in New York and take the bus up.
Because they play the Liberty tomorrow.
Yeah.
That game will be right here on Fox Sports.
Yes, so no us tomorrow. You have T.C. Martin and the Las Vegas Aces. But let's bring in a guy who knows the Aces probably better than anybody in the city who does not play for the Aces. And you can catch him over on Cofield and Company from time to time. It is Willie G. Ramirez, also does a great job covering Golden Knights, member of the Hockey Writers Association. What's going on, Willie?
Not much. Have you ever been out to eat with T.C. Martin?
You know, I have. Him and Bill Cartwright, name drop there, they took me out to dinner one night, and we ended up ending the night smoking cigars at a lounge at the Paris Casino. Here I am smoking cigars with a 5-time NBA champion.
Wow.
And that was a night to remember. Bill Cartwright, great guy, really nice guy. But yeah, TC, me and TC have been out a couple times. Usually
I've been to barbecue joints, and there's a place that may not be on our sponsorship list across Lotus, so I won't name it, but it is known for fast food delicacies, but I think it's like one tier up from your typical fast food drive-through joint.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably the same place he takes me.
Yes, right. I've seen him put down, and how that dude walks around as thin as a pencil is beyond me, because I've seen him put down some stuff.
So yeah.
It's no wonder that he enjoys watching 70 and a half hot dogs.
I don't know how many he could put down, but he can put himself in that competition because there's guys who they're like 25. I'm like,
metabolism is a wacky thing, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got to be like 6'3", probably, and 180 pounds.
Have you seen the social media the phenom that's going around right now? The viral activity of trying to eat a Big Mac in 1 minute.
Oh, I'd be so sick.
That's been brought up on Cofield and Company, and you never know. Griffin and I may be encountering something very soon.
Then I think something else will be brought up, the Big Mac.
Yeah. Anyway, Willie, Aces, they get, I'll say, humiliated by the Fever on Wednesday night. Becky Hammond really not happy. Maybe as angry as I've ever seen her. They followed up yesterday. They crushed the Connecticut Sun. Why is this team so Jekyll and Hyde?
Well, it's sad to say, but I don't think that I think there's a collection of things that Becky didn't expect. Okay. One of them is that Chelsea Gray is going to continue to knock off milestones, and we're going to see her continue to make incredible passes. The problem is, on the defensive end, I think she's lost a step. I'm watching some of the games that she's playing in, and on the defensive end, people have a quick first step. I mean, the game against the Washington Mystics recently, Suge Sutton off the first step. You know, this was somebody who was – when I first met Suge, I met her in the stands. She was there with her partner and attending an Aces game just two seasons ago. And then she got back in the WNBA. Now she's beating Chelsea Gray with her first step. So I just think that maybe on the defensive end where they're lacking, and it's not just Chelsea, I'm just using that as an example. Jackie Young is picking up some pieces and trying to fill some different roles. She's playing a little tired. The Jewel Lloyd project, which I wrote a column yesterday, you know, she's yet to show her offensive prowess. She's struggling. She's leading the team in three-point percentage, but she's the one that's firing up the shots. But her overall averages are down to career lows, and she just hasn't caught fire. She hasn't been that gold Mamba that everybody's expecting. Asia Wilson has been she's the star of the team, but she's been the only star. Whereas in years past, you've had a team that has had any one person step up on any given night. Asia's had to step up and had to have help, you know, on certain occasions. And the fact that they're beating up teams like the Connecticut Sun or Dallas, you know, teams that are in the lower half of the standings, isn't really, you know, we need to see this the same tenacity and prowess against the upper half of the league. Now they go to New York and they're playing a defending champion Liberty team that's clearly missing Jonquel Jones, but still, you know, and they're struggling right now, but they're still playing better than the Aces. So tomorrow is going to tell us a lot.
You mentioned Asia and how she's performed every single night. In that Indiana game, she actually outscored her teammates 29-25. She was the only player in double figures for the Aces in that game. I think she had like double digits in the first quarter, and the Aces were down by double digits. But is she having another MVP caliber season, and can she win the MVP with the Aces struggling the way they are?
No, she's not coming close to having the MVP season she had last. Like she's in the conversation, but I think right now, the Nafisa Collier is hands down the clear-cut MVP choice. She should be – I mean, if the voting was today, she should win it unanimously. It's not even close. And for those out there that think Caitlin Clark is her nearest competitor, they're wrong. It should be Alicia Gray from the Atlanta Dream, who's been playing – she's having a career season. Here's the thing. She's the star of that team, and she's up for most improved player because – they've never seen anything like it. It's sort of like Asia Wilson last year. Nobody saw anything like it. Like, in reality, you could have called Asia Wilson's year last year the most improved because nobody had seen anything like it. But when you're a star like that or like Alicia, you're supposed to get better every single year. You're supposed to put up those types of numbers. So for right now, the MVP conversation for me is Nafisa Collier and Alicia Gray from the Atlanta Dream. Asia's having an MVP year in terms of she's the MVP of the Aces. But as far as the league is concerned, she might get some votes, but she's not going to win it this season.
Speaking with Willie Ramirez about the WNBA and the Aces. Willie, do you put any stock into the loss of some assistant coaches might have caused the Aces to have a slower start? Is there anything to that?
It could be just because you're having to not only teach your system to a brand new team. Let's be real. The Aces, you know, I started off by talking about Chelsea and I went off to Jewel Lloyd, and I forgot to mention one important thing. There's only three players back in terms of the core. Kirsten Bell is back, but she didn't play barely any last year. She's been with the team. It's her fourth season. But really the core of this team is Asia, Jackie, and Chelsea. Everybody else is brand new. You get rid of Alicia Clark. You get rid of Kelsey Plum. There's no more Tip Hayes. I mean, you can go down the list. But Natalie Nicasse being in Golden State and Tyler Marsh with Chicago, that means that Becky not only has to teach a system and build chemistry with her players, but she's got to teach the system to the coaches. Those coaches have to teach it to the players, and then you have to build chemistry. And this might be a stretch. I don't know because I'm not in the inner workings of a coaching staff, but I would imagine that there's also something to be said of having a female assistant because it allows you to have a little more close bond in the locker room after practice, being able to walk with the girls. You know what I mean? Like Natalie and Becky could go into the locker room, you know, after a game, pregame, when they're getting ready. There's a comfortability where there's just – you can be – it's that little quick fine line closeness, right? And don't get me wrong – Her key assistants are fantastic. But just having Natalie there, I think you're seeing the success that they're having in Golden State because of Natalie and what she brings to that team, what she's learned from not only coaching with Becky, but coaching the players that she did. I asked her preseason what she learned most from the players because everyone was asking her what she learned from Becky. She said Kelsey Plum was one of the key players that taught her so much as a coach. And not only X's and O's, but how to be in shape like a WNBA player, bringing you back to her playing days at UCLA. So it absolutely has something to do with it in terms of, you know, Becky having to teach so many different people at so many different levels how this organization runs.
Now, there's so many directions I can follow up with you because you bring up the Kelsey Plum aspect. I think that's a monumental loss for this team, but it leads me to this. We saw expansion, and Natalie Nicasse, of course, is the coach now of the Golden State Valkyries. The expansion rules in the WNBA, they were kind of similar, I would say, to the NHL in that there were a lot of unprotected players that were able to go to Golden State, but we're going to see more expansion, and I think it's a good thing from the aspect that there's a lot of players that get drafted that never have an opportunity to play in the WNBA, and we've seen that with the Aces, where basically if you get drafted, you're not making the roster regardless. But then there's also the aspect of, is it growing too fast? Where do you stand on the five new teams that are going to be coming in the next couple of years?
Oh, man. I get where the players, and I think it's going to be in the CBA conversation. I get where the players are asking in terms of wanting bigger rosters. There's a need for both, though. There's a need for expansion in terms of the talent that's coming out of college and the number of players who are being cut. But there's also a need for those extra couple of roster spots. If you can carry 12, they're asking for maybe 15 because when players get hurt or players get, you know, or players need a maintenance day, there's not enough to fill in to have on the bench. And so, like, there's sometimes where there's only 8 active players right now. So the rosters need to expand because of that aspect, and that's in the players' eyes. And like I said, I think that'll be asked for with CBA bargaining. But I also think that expansion is necessary. The good thing about this is it's hitting everybody so fast. Like, wait a minute, what? This league's not making enough money. How can they expand if they can't even afford this? First of all, they're only adding one team per year over the next X amount of years. Portland, Toronto, Cleveland, Detroit, and the fifth one's escaping me. But
Philly.
So by 2030 is when they'll have all the 18 teams. It's not like they're throwing them all in. So they are giving themselves a little bit of cushion to build these rosters, build these teams, and build the league. With immediacy, what they need to do, they definitely need to expand the rosters so they have those extra bodies for injuries and whatever else it is that's needed. Some of these ladies are building families, right? Cheyenne Parker-Tyus just had a baby with the Aces, so she's going to need probably another 6 to 8 weeks, however long that she needs to recover from pregnancy. So I think it's a good argument for both sides. as to why. I don't think it's too quick. I think if they tried to force the issue in the next couple of years, not the next five, it would be different. But I think they're on the right track, and I think they'll do it right. The thing is, they're going to have – the CBA bargaining is going to be interesting and where they land off season. I don't think there's just going to be a work stoppage. I just think that there's going to be a lot of hard lines that they have to – you know, that they have to draw.
All right, Willie, when are you jumping on Cofield again, and where can people catch your work?
I will be on tomorrow with Cofield, and then we got a busy week. I'll be covering some NBA Summer League. But right now we've got a column up on Jewel Lloyd at the Sporting Tribune, and then I'm going to be working on some stuff for my site at WGRamirez.com. And, of course, this week doing some stuff later this week for the Associated Press.
All right, man, I appreciate you as always, Willie. Thanks for jumping on.
All right, talk to you guys later.
All right, buddy. That's Willie G. Ramirez. You can catch him, as he said, tomorrow over on Cofield and Company on our sister station, ESPN Radio, 100.9, 1100 AM. We're going to take a break, set up hour number two when we come back.
Thank you indeed, Chris. But before you leave for Japan, let's get back to your magnum opus.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Can I apologize for a minute? Because I wrote those.
Yes, yes.
And then they end too quickly.
Yeah,
we needed a tail on those. Now
me and Jess had that conversation.
I know,
the other day.
Just the open doesn't.
Yeah, no, the open's good.
And the close, I think, is good. But yeah, when Mike said, because I mean, you're doing five shows. I reached out to you to see, because yeah, you've been around here for so long. I said, Chris, do you want to do some shows after VGK Insiders? You've got a little bit of time. And you said yes. And I think I gave you five. I said, here's five ideas I have for a title.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're both into music. We both have kids that are into music. And
yes,
we both
yes.
like music. And so you chose, you know, a magnum opus. The,
yeah,
you know,
why like, not?
In fact, I think that we've got Beethoven's magnum opus in there and blah, 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 blah. But
I think there was a William Tell overture.
Yeah, there yes. is, yes. And so I sent it to our production guy, Mike Good, and I said, you know, there's only going to be four or five shows or something. We don't, you know, I don't want you to spend too much time on it. But
yeah, yeah.
And then he sent him back, and I was like, oh boy, that is a quick out on some of
yeah.
those.
Mike, Mike is my buddy, and I know you play golf with Mike, and you guys have a great relationship. Mike is of Japanese descent, and me and him have had the conversation for many, many years about him coming to hang out with me in Japan. So
he says he's going to.
Yeah, I know. I hope he takes me up because, like, he's a good guy to just have regular conversation
he's
with.
He's a great guy, yeah.
Like, I don't know if he's into sports, but, like, we just talk about noodles. And to me, that's a good way to get in with me. You talk to me about noodles. But
well, you know, half my family on my dad's side is Japanese.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's how I can say, Ohayo gozaimasu, konbanwa, konnichiwa, chotomate kudasai.
You know,
Ichini, Sanji, Go, Roku. I know some.
You know more than me.
I have some family that have lived and were born in Japan.
I did not know that. That's you learned something new about people that you've known for 20 years every single day.
There you go. So,
you know, I had the conversation with Lauren, who
97 won the point.
97 won the point. And she gave me a cookie, which is fantastic because I love cookies too. But we were talking about it. She's asked me, you know, how I'm doing. And I said, you know, it's crazy. Next Monday is my last day. And I interned here in the summer of 2004. I was hired here in September of 2005, after working a summer for the Colorado Springs Sky Sox.
I remember, yes.
Doing their post-game show. And I'm 46. I was like 23 or 24, I think, at the time. I have spent 15 years of my life working in this building, and it's kind of strange to think that, you know, when I turn the mic off on Monday next week, that's it. You know, I Darren and Ryan are gonna, you know, they said that they want to bring me on from time to time from Japan, and the people at the Golden Knights have said, hey, you know, anytime you want to go to a game, you let us know when you're in town. So I'm set there. And Brian Feldman, I do his show on Sunday mornings,
right.
He's like, hey, I don't know what time it is in Japan. I'm like, well, it's really late, you know, when you do your show on Sunday mornings. He's like, well, if you ever want to jump on, we could do the StreamYard. So you'll still be able to hear my voice a little bit, but obviously not quite as much. So coming up in the next hour, you had this great idea because you and I have been to games and concerts and stuff all over the country. You know, I've been to sporting events outside the United States, and we came up with this idea, and we want the listeners to text in the best and worst venues you have seen sporting events or concerts, and tell us why. Like, I want to know what makes a great venue, what makes a terrible venue.
Oh, I've got my five-point list.
I've got some doozies on here. One probably will not surprise anybody, but that's coming up on the other side. We're also going to talk about the Raiders and a recent poll that came out among NFL running backs and UNLV. A couple players making the preseason all-conference list. So that's coming up on the other side here on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Woohoo!